You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's In-Depth Series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project. It's a pleasure to have you with us today on Monday, March 8th. It's also a great pleasure to be joined in our virtual studio by two of our state representatives from the Bennington County 4 District. We're pleased to have with us today Representative Kathleen James and Representative Seth Bongartz. Together, they represent the towns of Manchester, Arlington, Sandgate, and a part of Sunderland in the state legislature. And really pleased to have the two of you here with us today to share your observations, thoughts, and thinking on how things have gone so far in the legislature this session. Now that we're rounding the halfway point, I guess, with town meeting now just behind us and the second half about to begin. I guess I'd just like to get us started by maybe asking both of you what are your overall thoughts about the first half of the session. And Representative James, why don't we have you go first? What are some of the major priorities you're seeing unfolding in the legislature, and what may be other issues that we can look forward to in the second half?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having us, Andrew, and I can answer that question, from two perspectives. From a big picture, kind of 50,000-foot bill, we are so far proving successful, I think, on focusing on some of the big shared priorities that cross parties and cross the House and Senate, which is to say COVID recovery, broadband, childcare, some of the big issues that the COVID-19 pandemic heightened, I guess, as you know, they were issues that we all knew were very important, and COVID made that even more clear. So we've recently passed a big COVID recovery bill, and Seth, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. But we've passed out sort of a mini COVID recovery bill that's going to provide help for different sectors of the economy and for different groups of Vermonters. And then, of course, we're sort of awaiting the arrival of our next $1.25 billion from the federal government, which is the same amount of money that we received last time around. And if the statistics hold true, last time Vermont ranked second in the country in per capita COVID relief funds from the federal government. And so it looks like we're trending in that direction again. And I think that the House and Senate leadership are still figuring out how we're going to allocate that money in the time that remains us before our targeted mid-June adjournment, whether we'll try to get it done before we go or come back for some kind of special session. So COVID recovery, broadband, childcare, and I hope we'll have a chance to talk more about those issues in depth. And despite the fact that we're, you know, hampered by Zoom and that we're working remotely, I've been really pleased with the amount of progress we've been able to make on really thorny issues. And if we come back around to it, I'd love to talk about what we're working on in the Education Committee and with the state colleges as well. But I think I'll let Seth take over for a minute and find out how he thinks it's going.
All right, Representative Bongartz.
Kathleen has obviously, you know, hit the big ones, and we knew they were going to be the big ones. But I think, you know, I would just sort of say that one of the things that I've just really felt is that people are working really hard, and there's an intensity to this session. There's an intensity, I think, in every committee effort and a sense of urgency. Partially it's because of COVID and wanting to make sure that we're, you know, COVID relief bills are coming out and we're actually doing something. But I just have a sense, you know, partially with this new group of legislators, I'm not saying this about me, I'm talking about what I'm observing about all the new legislators, is just, I don't mean to only single out the new ones, but they're part of it, a sense of urgency, that there's a lot to get done, a lot that needs to happen, and people are really connected. And, you know, Kathleen and I, we talked a little bit before we started here, we're off today, but we were both working all day. And, you know, and that's I think is, it's obviously not just us, that's what everybody's doing. People are, you know, see the issues that Vermont is facing. They really, there's a real wanting to deal with them.
So before we get into some of the issues in more depth, like broadband and affordable housing and so forth, I guess I'm curious, how has the working remotely been so far? I mean, it must be a really different experience for both of you. Do you think it's been sort of slowing things down when you're not able to kind of have direct face-to-face conversations with colleagues in the hallways or over coffee at the cafeteria, or has the work gone forward pretty much at the same pace as it would have ordinarily?
You want one of us to, well, which one you want to go first?
You know, I guess I could compare it to last year, even though, you know, last year was my first term, so it's not as though I have dozens and dozens of years to compare it to, but I've been surprised at the pace that bills, I mean, speaking from the education committee perspective, we're moving through bills as quickly and, you know, as thoughtfully slash quickly as we did last year when we were in Montpelier. I don't see a big slowdown. And to me, how people have simply made up for the fact that we're working remotely is by working longer and harder. You know, reaching out to folks after hours, lots of emails, lots of working on the weekends, because I think there's a sense that we're in kind of a moment of crisis and opportunity that we really can't let go. And, you know, I think the broadband bill is a great example of that, and some of the other bills that we'll talk about as well. Vermont State Colleges, you know, we can't afford, in my opinion, to have this be some sort of half-measure session. It's the issues are too important. The opportunities, especially with the federal funding, are too important, and everybody's too motivated.
I think it has both its drawbacks and its attributes. I think Kathleen is absolutely right. In my committee, we are likely this week to vote out our third kind of major piece of legislation at the Natural Resources Committee. That's, in one level, that's extraordinary to get three major bills out before a crossover. And so I think to that extent, the committees are able to work fine with Zoom. I also think that people, it's a lot easier for people, this is the bad part, I suppose, almost, for people to arrange meetings by Zoom. We get invitations for meetings. If you were trying to get people from around the state together for a meeting around a table, it might happen, you know, like, you know, on occasion. Now it happens like 30 times as much because it's at 8 o'clock on Thursday morning. We can do this and get everything. And so that's kind of endless. The other thing about it is the part you mentioned it, Andrew, in a way, the part about, you know, not being able to have lunch with people or just see them around the state house and talk to people is, you can get siloed. It's hard to really know what's going on in some of the other committees. The people try to make that happen. The leadership tries to put, you know, we have meetings and we listen to what others are doing, but it's not the same thing as, you know, you don't get to know your committee member. I'm digressing a little bit. You don't get to know your committee members the same way because there, you know, there are those moments when you're in the committee room before the meetings start and there's four of you sitting there and you just start talking, or you sit around a little bit afterwards and you talk and you see people in the hallway and you have a sense of what's going on in the other committees. That, I think, is for me the biggest loss, and the hardest thing to really make up for is the siloing. I know what's going on in my committee, and maybe more than I ever would have, because it's almost my entire focus, even though I try to do everything else. But it's hard to keep, it's hard to really understand, get a feel for what's going on in other parts of the body.
Yeah, it's got to be very different. I can't imagine, thinking back to some of the times I've been up there and seeing how much of that, those hallway conversations make a difference to people's understanding about what's going on, to imagine working without that. But,
one of the things, one of the things that Kathleen and I do is every couple of weeks, we meet with some, we have this little little like coffee hour almost with it. It was some kind of local reps that we're kind of friends with. And we just talk about what's going on in our committee. We get that's happening on a larger level. And we do it also a little bit here relatively locally, just to really get a sense of what's going on.
Yeah, I've made similar attempts. I put out a lot of random phone calls and emails and texts to a lot of the new legislators, just sometimes just to say hi. And also, I just pick up the phone every once in a while and call colleagues on another committee and say, what's going on? What are you doing?
What's the weather like in Wethersfield? Anyway, well, let's tackle some of the list of issues here that you've all mentioned and have been under discussion, for at least the past year anyway. Why don't we start with the broadband one, because that seems to be a bit of a game changer potentially in the COVID relief bill that the Senate just passed, going back to the House of Representatives, very likely, however, to pass there and get President Biden's signature and bring $1.2 or $1.3 billion. $100 million of that, I understand, if I heard the governor correctly last week at one of his press conferences, was going to be allocated towards broadband improvements here in the state. Is that enough to really kickstart things to where we would like to see them be, so that issues like telehealth or education, just communicating in general, really get improved quickly?
Well, it's better than not having $100 million. So, but you know, I can talk a little bit about, and I, you know, I didn't mean to be glib, but you know, the true cost, and I, you know, I always feel like I need to confirm this number, but you know, the true cost of the state or the federal government building out broadband to all the last mile homes and regions and roads in Vermont is, as we know, far more than $100 million. But the $100 million, I think, will certainly go a long way. And the broadband bill is sort of an interesting construct. I checked in with a friend on the committee today because I knew we'd be talking tonight. And what it sets up is both grants and loans to support our regional CUDs. And I think there are 9 across the state right now, with our Southern Vermont CUD being one of them. And the loan part of the program is to go to CUDs to complete all of the pre-construction work. So feasibility studies, poll surveys, business plans. So CUDs will be able to apply for loans to do the 20% of broadband build out that's pre-construction, everything to get the poles ready to string up. And then loans will be provided to either CUDs or an internet service provider who's working with a CUD. So a private ISP can't just come in and snap up a loan. You have to be working through a CUD. And hopefully that strategy will provide our CUDs with, you know, the support they need. I believe the bill also includes some more technical assistance and staffing support at the Department of Public Service to help our CUDs, but I would need to check on that. So, you know, whether the answer is quickly, I can't say. I think everybody is frustrated with the pace, but this will certainly allow CUDs to move faster than they would have without the funding.
Seth, did you want to weigh in on that, or?
No, I think that's a good explanation for it, that is.
Okay. I was also fascinated by the article in VT Digger today about Starlink and satellite internet connectivity, which seemed like that might bypass that whole quote-unquote infrastructure issue, although the $600 startup cost might sort of slow some folks down a little bit, I guess, but that's certainly a technology that we could easily see being part of the mix. I guess just to move on, since there's so many things to talk about here in the time we have, want to move on. Another big issue, of course, that's come up repeatedly is the whole question of affordable child care. Are we seeing any progress being made in any bills that would address that issue, which I know has been a big struggle for a lot of folks here in the state, juggling childcare and trying to hold down jobs.
Kathleen, why don't you start? Because I think you've got a real sense of exactly where this is right now.
Okay, and then I'll turn it over to you, Seth, because Seth and I are both lead, and original sponsors on a very ambitious child care bill. That's H-171. And the Human Services Committee has really been taking a lot of testimony on that. And I say ambitious because the ultimate goal of this bill is to provide access and affordability to the point where no Vermont family pays more than 10% of their household income for childcare. So that's a very ambitious goal, obviously. So that part of the bill has gone into, not surprisingly, a funding study to get a better handle on exactly how much that would cost, how it would interface with our current systems, what it would take to make that happen. So that has become a study. Another very important part of the bill focuses on support and workforce development for our early childhood educators, because they're highly underpaid, not as any measure of their worth, but because the system can't afford to pay them more. And so help with school, help with loan payback, and help ultimately in making sure that they receive a wage that's commensurate with what they could earn in the public school system, which is better paid. So that bill is going to be coming out of Human Services, I would assume, this week, because it's crossover week.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about what was going to be in it at this point, but it's at least a 3-year process. By the way, it's set to come out in stages over the course. Right, the first year is really to set the goals, to establish the goal in by legislation, the 10%. I do know that the cost estimates are at this point kind of all over the place, which is why that portion of it has gone into study to make sure we really understand it. But I'll just add on to this. We talked about this once before, I think, when the three of us were chatting, but Kathleen and I and others met with the child care providers in Bennington County before the session started. And we listened to the people who give so much of themselves to our kids. And they didn't, just really, the pay is horrible. There's no, people who have gotten their degrees, gotten their certificates, they do so much, and they, there's no retirement benefits. There's no, the pay is horrible, and it really made me sad. That part of it, and we have to fix that. And it's going to cost money. And I think if this is one of those times when you simply say it's going to cost money, we're going to have to pay for it, we have to fix the child care system in Vermont, because it is keeping women out of the workforce. It's having, of course, a greater impact on women. That what it does to the failure of to have that opportunity for kids who really need it sets them back in a way that in many ways they can never catch up on with for the rest of their lives. And it's just really, if you look at it just from a dollars and cents perspective, it's really hurting our economy. And it's not going to be inexpensive, but it's one of those things we must do it for all of those reasons.
When you think about it, the two issues we just talked about are a key part of our economic infrastructure, broadband and childcare. And so it's heartening to see in a session that's completely constrained by a pandemic and by Zoom, that these are two big bills that are moving forward and gaining a lot of support.
I think there's huge support within the legislature for really doing something serious, not just little incremental nickels and dimes here. We got to fix child care.
Yep. And across parties, this is not a party issue at all. And neither is broadband.
we could probably talk for an entire program about this issue, because there's so many fascinating aspects to it. As to whether a free market solution where you simply pay people who want to go into the profession more and then drive up costs is the way to go, or really is the ultimate solution much greater expansion of government services, like you would see in some European countries, for instance, where this is simply not an issue because there is childcare support already in place. But I've got a long list of questions here, so I'm gonna have to leave it at that. But that's something we'll have to return to, perhaps at a future program or whatever.
Families can't afford to pay more, though. So,
I'm sorry.
I said families can't afford to pay more.
No, so. Yeah, I know, but yeah. All right. Well, related to that is the affordable housing question, and I know we've discussed this before as well. But is there anything moving on that? I mean, I know there's a housing bond bill of some sort under consideration in the virtual state house. Is that the case? Is that going to supply some money to potential housing developers to go out and build some badly needed affordable or workforce housing?
Is that that's happening on the Senate side, I believe.
It is.
And I'm not sure whether that's gaining traction in the Senate or not right now.
I haven't heard much about it. No. One thing that we included in the recovery bill, the COVID recovery bill that we just passed, is that's H-315. And that included a pretty significant slug of money for the Vermont Housing and Conservation Board. I think $10 million, but I would have to look that up.
And with more to come, actually, I believe.
With more to come.
Yep.
So I think funding for VHCB to not only create new housing for homeless Vermonters or people who are now at risk of being homeless thanks to the pandemic, but also they do amazing work to build affordable housing as well. So I think funds are going to be flowing to VHCB. And I haven't heard, and I should have checked into this, I haven't heard about the bond idea.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's not gaining traction, but I have a feeling it's not because we haven't heard about it. But there might be under the radar in the Senate more going on than we know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be that funneling of federal dollars to organizations like VHCB.
And keep in mind with VHCB that usually what they're doing is they're not funding whole projects; they're usually coming in and closing the gap. So, 10 or 20 or 30 million more in VHCB can actually go a long way and build a lot more than 10 or 20 or $30 million worth of housing. They kind of come in at the end and help close the gap.
Okay. Well, we'll stay tuned on that as well, since that's been an issue that's been kicking around way before the pandemic arrived. And I'm sure even more critical now, but let's move on to the education front. And Representative James, I know this is an area you're closely involved with, being on the education committee. There are several things that seem to be happening on that front. I mean, it's always a very active area, but it seems like there's some legislation around school construction and also this weighting study. I guess I was wondering if you could explain that a little bit for us. What's happening with that?
So I guess just to backtrack for 2 seconds, my committee is going to be voting out our three big bills. We're a week behind Seth's natural resources. We're voting out three big bills this week. We're voting out the construction bill, Andrew, that you just mentioned. And before anybody gets too excited, that is not a bill to resume the state construction aid funding program that has been suspended since 2007. But it is a bill to start moving in that direction. So the construction bill is going to update the building facilities standards. It is going to create a statewide assessment of school buildings so we know kind of what shape all of our buildings in and we can start to prioritize them. And then it will study the funding to look at how other states are currently funding or helping schools and districts with their capital needs, because we're the only state in New England right now that doesn't provide some sort of aid to districts with those kinds of building needs. So that's the construction bill. We're going to pass out a big literacy bill, and we're going to vote tomorrow or Wednesday on the community schools bill. So that's what's happening on the House side. And the waiting study is starting in the Senate. And I did talk to Senator Campion this morning, and I know that they've are going to be taking testimony and that they've been talking quite a bit about the waiting study, but that's going to start there and come to the House. And for kind of the 101 on on that. Vermont has a system in our education finance metric by which we weight the cost of educating different categories of students. So, you know, in the complex and convoluted and super hard to understand education finance system that Vermont has, we do acknowledge that it costs more to educate, say, high school students because of all their extracurriculars and sports and extra programming, and that it costs less to educate pre-K students, and that it costs more to educate students who are English language learners or who are living in poverty or who attend small isolated schools in rural districts. Those students cost more to educate. And the formula that we used to calculate how much these students cost is very outdated and was never really based on good data to begin with. And so the legislature commissioned a study, and that study was delivered like a nonpartisan kind of academic level study that was delivered to the legislature right before COVID last year and recommended that we change the weights. And the weights are what are used to calculate ultimately property tax rates. So when we change those weights, it's going to change that equation. And some districts are going to sort of come out ahead, and some districts are kind of going to come out behind. And so, you know, you have people saying that the weights are wrong, that it's a huge inequity, and we need to enact change immediately to kind of right the wrongs of inequitable education funding. And you have other folks, I think Seth and I included, saying, yep, this is inequitable, we have to fix it, but we're going to need to have some kind of on-ramp or you know, phase in so that districts who are going to wind up, I guess, with higher tax rates have some sort of phase in. So that was a long answer, but the weighting study is a very big deal. And, you know, whether we wind up with a bill this year or next year, I don't know. The powers that be will decide that.
No pun intended, Seth, but did you want to weigh in on that as well?
No, there's nothing to add to that. Kathleen did a good explanation. It's gonna, that is a bill that is gaining traction, partially our friend Laura Sebelia, is one of the drivers. Just saying, we gotta take this seriously. It's time to fix this, and I think she's probably right. We'll see what it means. It's early in the process.
Is it too early?
The poverty weight. Oh, I'm sorry, Andrew. The poverty weight was the one that was off by the hugest factor. And yeah. So it's going to be those districts that educate a lot of low-income students that are really going to see, a big step ahead.
I guess I'm just wondering, do you have any sense as to how it would affect the local school districts here or the Taconic and Green District? I mean, would it be a net negative from our parochial standpoint or?
Okay, so the last time I looked at it, and this may have been updated, but the last study I saw was kind of an informal, I mean, nothing that the Joint Fiscal Office does is back of the envelope, but it was an informal look, and the weights are levied at the district level. So the Taconic and Green, I think, comes out sort of okay. Because, we have schools like, we have communities like Danby that educate a higher percentage of students in poverty, for example, netted out against a community like Dorset that has a lower percent. So the last time I looked at it, I remember thinking, it's not going to be a huge boon to us, but it's not going to be a huge hammer either.
Okay. Before we move on completely from that, I guess I also wanted to ask you both if that bill that involves a tax structure change has any legs to it. That's one study suggested that it might be time to shift our education tax funding formula more towards an income-based system as opposed to property tax. And this is, of course, a subject that has come up before in the past. Is that anything that's likely to move forward in the second half of the session, or given the fact that it is, there's a lot of complexity around that, and definitely winners and losers in play there, that's just not ready for prime time yet.
Well, I don't know if it's how quickly it's going to gain traction, but it's going to gain traction. And by that, I mean, at the very least, it's going to get a hard look with a lot of testimony and a lot of input. It's 182 pages long if you're looking for something to do.
Bedtime reading, huh?
Bedtime reading. I think when we talk about shifting to education, income for funding schools, what we're really talking about in that study is the primary residences. And really, as you know, what we have right now with primary residences and the reduction in taxes for based on income is we really have an income tax sort of disguised as a property tax. I mean, it wasn't intentionally to disguise it, but that's kind of what it is. So what they're talking about is just simply make it, when you're talking about primary residences, simply make that based on income. And it may not even be as big a change as we think it would be, because we're almost doing that now. We're not talking about funding the rest of education with income. Everything else would stay the same. It would be that portion of school funding that would shift to. And the other portion, the other part of the bill, in particular the big one, is to, rather than tax just goods the way we do now with the sales tax, is to expand it across the board to services. And there's an underlying rationale for this. I'm, by the way, not saying whether it's in the end going to make sense or not, or whether I'm for it or whatever. But the underlying rationale is that as the baby boomers and the population gets older, they actually shift their buying more toward services. And that if we focus only on goods, the amount to be covered is shrinking. And the other thing is that if you do that, then you can take the 6% and lower it down to 3.8. So it's broadening it and lowering it. Now, I've got no idea in the end whether that's going to end up making sense or not, but that's what it's talking about. I think maybe the shift, and I'll say, underline maybe, but maybe the shift to just the first part, to going just to an income basis for the people who live here for the primary residences, that may well make sense. But again, we'll have to see what the numbers really say in the end. But that is going to get taken up by Ways and Means and other committees before we're done. It might be over the course, that may take two or three years as well.
Interesting. Well, Seth, one other question I wanted to ask you, since this pertains to something I believe your committee has been working on, is that the revisions to the bottle bill or the recycling bill. Can you tell us where that stands at the moment? It sounds like that would broaden the number of different classes or categories of returnable cans and bottles that folks could get back for a deposit. There's more to it than that, I'm sure. So
yeah, no, the main thing is a practical matter. What we're really talking about is plastic water bottles and wine bottles.
Okay.
Right. And the estimate is that would almost double the amount of things that are redeemed. We're also talking about raising the deposit from 5 cents to 10 cents. We put that 5 cent deposit in, what was it, almost 50 years ago. There's been some inflation since then. And so just going to 10 cents, but it's estimated that going from 5 to 10 cents will increase, for everything that's covered, will increase the return rate from 75%. When Vermont's fairly high, actually, at 75% with 5 cents. What raise, as we've seen in other states in the country, it'll raise it to 90%. And that's a lot. Universal redemption, and we all know that plastic water bottles in particular are just thrown into the trash all the time, and there's a lot of volume there going into landfills, and some of it is getting recycled. A lot of it's getting recycled now, but this just raises the whole rates, and it actually results in true recycling as opposed to another final use. As opposed to a final use in something else, it results in true recycling, more bottles being made, more bottles coming back, and then it happening again and again.
Okay. Working our way through the list here, but before we have to run, I did want to ask you both about another issue I don't believe we've talked about before in any of our conversations, and it's one that sort of come onto my radar screen a lot more in the last month or so, and that's the whole issue around racial bias in Vermont. As we all know, Vermont is overwhelmingly Caucasian state, and it seems like there's been a lot more conversation happening around how can we make Vermont a more welcoming place for other folks. There's also a big economic component to this as well, as we were talking before we started about how if we're going to grow the workforce in Vermont and replace folks who are retiring out of the workforce and attract younger workers, that's going to change those percentages around. It's got to, basically. I guess I'm just wondering, what are you hearing in the virtual state house or as you chat with your colleagues and other folks? Is this an issue that's really beginning to kind of bubble up into something that its time has come to really tackle in some way or another?
Yeah, I mean, the Social Equity Caucus has now become, I think, the largest caucus in the legislature, rivaling the Climate Solutions Caucus. And we meet every Wednesday morning. And I think that there is a lot of energy around advancing bills this year that advance, racial justice and that take a hard look at equity. And I think that many, many bills are getting looked at through the lens of equity. And a couple of the bills that that are moving that I wanted to, that I could talk about a little bit. I don't know how much time we have, but and these are bills that that I sponsored or co-sponsored, obviously, which is somebody else's bill and you add your name as a sign of support. But three of the bills that are moving along right now, H-196 would give some support in terms of staffing to the Office of Racial Equity. Right now, the Office of Racial Equity equals Susanna Davis. That's it. This would provide her with two FTEs. And I know that that bill is not only moving along, but I believe supported by Governor Scott and his administration. So I'm very hopeful about that. So that'll give some capacity to the Office of Racial Equity. H-210 is, a really important bill that the Healthcare Committee has been taking testimony on. And that's a bill that looks at healthcare equity and health equity in Vermont. And we all know that, BIPOC Vermonters have been hit harder by COVID. They have higher infection rates and higher death rates and less access to healthcare, here in our state. And these are examples where data, clearly shows a very stark inequity. And so you need policies, to rectify that. And H-210 is a pretty broad bill that would establish an Office of Health Equity in Vermont to take a look at these issues. It would really beef up our data collection so that we know what's going on in terms of health inequities in our state. It would provide grants to programs that promote health equity to BIPOC Vermonters and other communities like LGBTQ Vermonters. And it would also require medical practitioners when they're relicensing to take 2 hours of cultural competency training. So that's bill number two. And bill number three, which is also clipping right along in the Commerce Committee, is H-336. This is another one that I think both Seth and I added our names to. And that would beef up the technical assistance and support within the Agency of Commerce to BIPOC business owners in Vermont. So in terms of, there was a survey done, and it turned out that Black Vermonters who own businesses or are self-employed really didn't have the level of support that they need from the state. So when we did in our last COVID recovery bill, when we provided $5 million in funding to women-owned and BIPOC-owned businesses, there was an infrastructure, there was a mechanism in place to let women know about those grants. BIPOC business owners didn't have that same information infrastructure. They didn't know the grants were available. And so this is a step toward rectifying that. So, when you talk about institutional and systemic racism, the way to fix that, is through policies that are anti-racist, that undo that. And so anyway, that move you in the right direction. And so I'm seeing a lot of energy around bills this year, and it's very heartening.
The other part about this as it relates to legislation is it's also getting just inserted in bills that you wouldn't think of as bills that would affect this topic. I was just reading this afternoon, preparing for what's going to happen after crossover in my committee, where we may take up an Active 50 bill. The bill as drafted has some language in it that talks about when projects take place. One of the things kind of on the checklist you have to look at is it negatively impacting a subset or a group of people? And obviously what that's talking about, the worst case scenario would be something that we have seen across the country in times past, where when development takes place, it's the people the poor people who, take the hit. Or black communities, whatever. And it's really to make sure that it's just, so my only point is you're going to see it inserted in other bills like Act 250, just to make sure that's a consideration. Are people being treated fairly by this? There's one class of people or one group of people being negatively impacted. So that's going to be there too. But I think you mentioned this, Andrew, the other part of all of this is, you just have the notion of the basic justice that we were talking about, and Kathleen was talking about, but also as a very practical matter, Vermont must be a place. Our demographic trends aren't great, as we all know, and Vermont must be seen across the country as a place that is truly welcoming. Of people that look different than us, and we have to not just look that way, we actually have to be that way, because if we're going to build the workforce of the future, and if we're going to change these demographic trends, and we're going to have a successful economy, we need to get away from this notion, this whole thing about, oh, you're not a Vermont unless you've been here for, five generations. Well, you know what? Nonsense. If you're here and you're committed to Vermont, you're a Vermonter. And we have to make people really feel that. And we have to, there really is a difference in what it feels like. And it's not intentional on the part of all of us who are Caucasian, but it does feel different to people of color, and people who are different than us, and we need to really get our arms around that, and we need to fix it, and we need to make it be a place that is truly welcoming, or otherwise we're not going to be successful economically. Just looking at it from that sort of almost selfish perspective, but that's we need to look at it in every way possible. That's one of them.
There's a lot to that. This whole subject has come up most frequently in the past, as well as around police stops and racial profiling by police. Will any of these bills address that part of it too, or is that not yet ready for a legislative fix of some sort?
It could be going on, and we might not even know. I don't know which committee.
We passed, and gosh, I'm sorry, Andrew. I would now have to go back and look at refresh my memory, but we passed some legislation last year, I think in the Justice Reinvestment 2 bill, but I didn't come with my notes on that one, and my hard drive in my head is full, but we passed a bill last year, I know, that would improve data collection across the justice system, so that we can start gathering better data. I mean, we know that that Black Vermonters are more likely to be pulled over. They're more likely to be stopped, and I think that this bill expanded that notion of data collection, because you need to start at first by getting your arms around the problem and understanding how widespread it is, and collecting better data so that you can then put policies in place to address the problem. But I'm sorry I can't remember, but I know we passed something around that last year.
No, that's okay. That just thought popped in my mind as I was listening to Seth's answer there. Well, okay, so there's like about five other things here I'd love to talk about, from pension reform to the transportation bill and climate action, to say nothing of economic recovery from COVID and the pandemic, which hopefully will be addressed to some degree in the next federal legislation that we're hopefully going to be seeing some money flowing into the state fairly soon. But unfortunately, I'm going to leave it there for now. But I wanted to thank you both for making the time available to help bring us up to speed on what's happening out in the virtual state house. And we'll certainly be following along. And I know you both have a coffee hour coming up, I think, this coming weekend on Saturday.
Saturday.
Can folks log into that? Will you be sharing the Zoom information?
Yeah, we're asking people to email me just before, 30 minutes before, just so that I'm not frantically, anytime before 30 minutes before, just email my legislative address. That's kjames@ledge.state.vt.us, and then I'll send you the link.
All right, and then we'll have you back in a couple more months after the session's over and talk about all those other things we didn't get to today.
Yeah, there's a lot we didn't talk, like you say, the pension reform, there's the money for trail systems, there's all kind of exciting stuff going on. And if we had a couple hours, we could have easily filled it. So
state colleges.
But thanks. Yeah, state colleges.
Yeah. And 10 million more for business in business grants coming soon.
So whatever you want to talk, Andrew, we're
all right. Well, we may have to have you back then before the end of the session.
I think so.
All right. Terrific. Well, thanks for your time today. Thanks to all of you who've been watching. Hope you enjoyed the show, found it interesting. And, we'll see you again the next time. Thank you both, Representatives James and Bongartz. Really appreciate your time, and we'll be in touch.
And as always, thank you, Jeanette.
All right.
For this is a huge community service, so thank you, Jeanette.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.